Welcome to EJB Talks, Rutgers Blaustein School experts in policy, planning, and health, where we talk with our faculty and staff experts, as well as students, about how the fields of public policy, urban planning, public health, health administration, and public and urban informatics affect your lives. Welcome to EJB Talks. I'm Stuart Shapiro, the interim dean of the Blaustein School, and the purpose of this podcast is to highlight the work my colleagues and our alumni in the fields of policy, planning, and health are doing to make the world, the country, and New Jersey a better place. Today, we're very happy to welcome Billy Terry, the Executive Director of the National Transit Institute, to the podcast, continuing our season-long theme of highlighting the Blaustein School centers, research centers. Welcome, Billy.
Thank you so much, Stuart. I appreciate you having me, my friend.
We're very glad to have you. So let's do as we have with all of these, start with a description of what NTI is for those that may not know, and what its mission and how you got involved with it.
Well, Stuart, NTI, the National Transit Institute, serves as the training arm, the federally funded training arm for the transit industry. I think for many of us, regardless of where we live, big town, small town, north, west, east, south, whenever we think of public transportation, we think of the most overt part of public transportation. We see buses, we see trains. The reality is there is an extensive back office operation, so to speak. And so there are transit agencies that require planners, engineers, marketing, law enforcement. And the National Transit Institute provides training predominantly to the staff of transit agencies across the country. When you are a federally funded transit agency, there are very specific rules on procurement, on disadvantaged business enterprises, other administrative operational procedures that you must adhere to. And NTI provides training to help those transit agencies adhere to those rules, regulations, and guidelines.
Gotcha. And how did you get involved with all this?
Well, you know, I have been in the transit industry for a number of years, but I am a recovering lobbyist. Stuart, we've had some
conversations. There's no shame in being a lobbyist, Billy.
Absolutely. I served as a lobbyist for WMATA, the transit agency in D.C., was their federal lobbyist for a number of years. And I spent a number of years on the government affairs team for the American Public Transit Transportation Association, which is the association for the industry, if you will. I had the fortune of meeting Paul LaRouche, who was the previous director for NTI for almost 18 years. Paul and I, for me, just like for many, was a mentor. And Paul came to me and said, "Hey, Billy, I'm thinking about retiring soon. What would you think about joining me at NTI?" And I said, "Paul, I'm a stinking lobbyist. I don't know about training." And he said, "Well, Billy, you've lobbied virtually every issue related to public transportation." He said, "I could find a CEO somewhere to come and do this, but I think you would have a unique perspective." So we went back and forth, and finally I hopped on Amtrak, came up here to New Brunswick, interviewed with Paul, interviewed with Bob Nolan, and they think we think will be a good fit. And I came and joined NTI in January of 2018 as the associate director, with the intention of Paul retiring next year and me assuming the director role. And as many of you know, Paul left us far too soon, in November of 2018, which accelerated my transition to executive director. But it, to be honest with you, Stuart, it was really Paul's vision of what he believed that I could contribute to the National Transit Institute and the industry from my government affairs background that brought me here.
Gotcha. Yeah, we do miss Paul a great deal here at the Blaustein School. I want to talk to you about the DC Metro now that I know you have a Washington connection, but we'll hold off on that because that's probably of more interest to you and I than it is to our audience.
Absolutely.
What kind of, you talked about, you're different than a lot of our centers in that you're very training focused. So let me ask you, what kind of training our clientele need? You touched on it a little bit in talking about procurement and a few other things.
Right.
What are sort of the big, most popular things that you guys offer to transit agents?
Absolutely. And training can be a nebulous verb or noun. I guess you look at it. But when you are a federal grantee, regardless of what industry, again, there are rules, regulations, and guidelines you must adhere to doing whatever you do, right? So the training for us, let's take procurement, for example. There are certain rules as it pertains to putting out bids, receiving bids, even in operations. There are certain American with Disabilities Act parameters you must adhere to. Title VI, for example, when you print schedules or you display schedules. So there are just a number of different rules, regulations, and guidelines you must adhere to on an operational and an administrative regards. If you want to move a bus stop or change service, there are certain public announcement rules that you have to apply to. We have a course called Public Involvement in Transportation Decision Making. So again, I will say, Stuart, we do most of our training that's focused on the white collar administrative functions. We don't do much of our training relating to operators or mechanics. Maybe years down the road, but much of our training is focused on the administrative aspect of running a transit agency.
Gotcha. Yeah, you don't know that there's this whole world behind those buses and trains.
Absolutely. There is a very, very, very extensive world. And as a matter of fact, one of the things that the industry is on a major marketing campaign is, hey, if you are a marketing major, if you're an engineer, if you are in law enforcement and you never thought about public transportation as a career, if you are electronics, if there are architecture, there are very few occupations that I can think of where there probably is not a role for you in public transportation.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Most of us would never have imagined that. Now, I know the way you do things has had to change dramatically because of COVID-19 and what's gone on in the past years. Can you talk a little bit about how that's changed life at NTI?
Absolutely. Pre-COVID, most, I would say 98 to 99% of our training was on-site instructor-led training. So let's say Metro in Minneapolis, we would agree with them to host our Procurement One course. We would advertise it. People from around the country would fly to Minneapolis, would stay in a hotel adjacent to them. They had a conference room. We would do 1, 2, 3, 4 day on-site classroom style training. Now, post-COVID, we've instantaneously had to transition all of our training and educational events to virtual. We use Zoom as our platform. And that has been a major, major lift. Simple things from when we did it on site, you got this nice bulky binder that you use as an asset. You write notes in. Now we have to send it electronically. Do you have a printer at home to print those 200 pages out? Attendance. You used to sign your initials next to your name on site. Now we have to take virtual attendance. And I think there's been some yin and some yang to it, Stuart. If you were a small agency and you didn't have much of a travel budget, for training, it was challenging for you to send your employees to NTI training across the country if we weren't doing it in proximity to you. Doing it virtually, we've been able to incorporate just a significantly increased number of people who previously couldn't participate in our training now that we're doing it virtually. But I think most people would agree that there's nothing like doing it on site, right? Probably 50% of our people who take our courses say the networking is every bit as much as important as actually the course itself. And you don't have that networking element when you're taking a course virtually. So to your point, we've instantaneously had to switch to a virtual training delivery platform. Once we do go back on site, and $64,000 question. I do not know when, but we will continue to have a virtual course portfolio because the demand has just been too great for those virtual offers.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's something we think about as an educational institution as well. You know, what's going to change and what's going to go back to the way it was before? What are sort of the most important things you've learned from having to make this switch that was forced upon you? I mean, I had never taught virtually before March of 2020, and I'm thrilled to be back in the classroom. But I wouldn't say I hadn't learned a lot from the year and a half of teaching online. And I'm sure the same is true at NTI.
Absolutely. I think, you know, any one of our courses, we are constantly trying to put 16 ounces in a 12-ounce jar. You know, I mean, we could do a semester-long graduate course on any one of our topics. And even when we were doing it on site, we were trying to do the highlights over 1, 2, 3, or 4 days. And so we've had to truncate it even more so for our virtual courses. We concluded that about 4 hours a day for 4 consecutive days is probably the max virtual educational absorption that an individual can take, which means we've had to truncate much of the content in our courses to offer them virtually. So I think we've learned how to be more efficient. Mm-hmm. We've, in some instances, we've taken the highlights of the highlights, if that makes any sense.
Yep.
Right. And so now when we move back, ultimately, when we move back to on-site courses, we're finding that there will be a distinction between what we taught virtually and what we're able to teach on-site. And we have to give an account for that, because the individual who took Procurement 1 virtually is getting a very different product than the individual who took Procurement 1 on-site. And so we're going to have to figure out how we account for that. But efficiency is the word of the day when I think about what we've learned teaching virtually and administering virtually also.
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly right. And sort of figuring out like what you can do in this hybrid world where some people get it virtually and some people get it in person, and what's the equivalence and things like that. Absolutely. Any new courses that you've taught because of the pandemic?
I wouldn't say because of the pandemic, but there were courses that we had on the books and we were looking forward to unleashing them. And then the pandemic came and we've had to unleash it virtually. One that I'm very, very proud of that we just had a recent write-up in Mass Transit Magazine. We've developed a new course called Transitioning from Frontline Employee to Frontline Supervisor. And that was sort of birthed out of this this notion, Stuart. I was talking to a number of CEOs across the country, large agencies, small agencies, bus, rail, and they would say, listen, we will have a wonderful mechanic, right? And does his or her job well. And I won't get into the intricacies of union life, but that mechanic will be very good. And then there'll be an opportunity for a supervisor of mechanics. And we'll say, hey, you're a great mechanic. Now you be a supervisor. That individual has no management, no supervisory training whatsoever. And we throw him or her to the wolves and say, now supervise your peers.
We do the same thing with faculty.
Well, there we go. So you know how, you know the routine, right?
Yep.
And so we developed this course with that very thought in mind, that we need to give those individuals who are thrust in those management and supervisory roles some basic conflict resolution, coaching, self-reflection, and we've had some tremendous, tremendous success. People telling just heart-wrenching stories. And so we're really, really proud of that's one course that we launched during COVID that's had a tremendous success.
That's great. All right, well, let's look forward now. Let's hope the pandemic is actually behind us. We're not sure of that yet, obviously, but there are some good signs at least. What are the big things NTI wants to do in the next 5 years?
Wow. We have been given the green light from our funder, the Federal Transit Administration, to move more into the leadership and management realm, as evidenced by the previous course that I mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
We talked a little bit a while ago, Stuart, about the diversity of transit agencies. And so transit agencies are diverse. They operate in diverse operating environments, and they're the collective of diverse people. And I think most of us would agree, regardless of where you come from, your political persuasions, et cetera, we exist in a time and place now where diverse people who are coming together, in some ways good, in some ways bad, and we have to figure out a way how we remain a productive society. So in a transit agency, you may have a marketing department full of people from all different backgrounds. And how are we NTI going to equip that manager to have an effective marketing department with people from those various backgrounds? You may have someone in your procurement park department or marketing department, somebody with a MAGA hat, somebody with a BLM coffee mug, right? You know, and that's a reality. You may have someone in your engineering department who was from law enforcement and someone who has feelings about law enforcement. But in that office work sitting, how do you come together and do what that office is responsible for doing? So we are getting much into the leadership and management. We're developing a brand new course that I am totally blank, a brand new diversity course, and I'm blanking on the name of it, embracing principles of diversity and inclusion to become a more effective manager. We're working on another course now. It'll probably be a 4-hour course on distinctions between management and leadership. Right. So we are moving into the leadership realm. The last thing I'll say, Stuart, is the face of executive leadership in the transit industry is changing. I would imagine, as in many other instances, industries, it's not just 60-year-old white men. Right.
Right.
And so what does that mean for the industry? What does the DNA of a transit executive look like now? And we're excited about playing a role in training that next level of executive management and public transportation.
Well, those are similar issues to what we're grappling with in academia and really what a lot of people are grappling with now as the world becomes more diverse as the country and as our workforce becomes more diverse. We all have to do a better job of managing that diversity and figuring out how to get the most out of it. Billy, thank you so much for coming on today.
Absolutely. My pleasure. I'm so grateful. Go Scarlet Knights.
There we go. Baseball team's doing really well right now. I don't know if you know about that. The baseball team won 15 in a row recently.
Oh, wow.
Also, a big thank you to Amy Cobb and Karen Olson for making sure this thing ticks. We will see you next week with another talk from another expert at the Weilstein School. Until then, stay safe.